all you can do is just wait and be calm and drink water and sleep. That's really all you can do.
Hi, welcome to Drone Therapy Podcast, where just when you think it is going to come to an end, the vibrations slow to the point where you can't even remember when the last one was. I'm your host, Crystal Jax, aka Bridget Bardot, and it's been a while, and that's fine. That's fine. The last we talked, we were speaking about relationships over sustained tones. Since we're eyelash deep in interpersonal effectiveness, I wanted to bring someone else onto Drone Therapy Podcast for the first time ever. Maria Chavez is a real treasure. I feel a little sad that most of our conversation is about her brain surgery, which was 5 years ago, and the subsequent healing process and sabbatical. I think it's all so valuable to hear about, but if we ever meet on the airwaves again, I hope we can talk much more about her process, breaking records and playing them back with a very special needle, her book, her art installation, her performances, and her unique life that she's lived. I think at the end of this conversation, you will also want to hear her talk for about 5 more hours. If you're not familiar with Maria Chavez, I will read you her very approachable bio now. Born in Lima, Peru, and based in New York City, Maria Chavez is best known as an abstract turntablist, sound artist, and DJ. Coincidence, chance, and failures are themes that unite her books, visual work, and installations with her improvised solo turntable performance practice. Chavez's work is well known for taking the detritus of vinyl and repurposing them into sonic sculptures that can be compared to improvised music concrete pieces or, conceptually, sonic sculpture sessions. Chavez's 2012 book on abstract turntablism, Of Technique, Chance Procedures on Turntable, is both an academic resource and a foundational text for a new generation of turntablists. I first met artist Maria Chavez at Electric Eclectics Festival, and she eventually returned to Toronto to perform with the one and only Lana Del Satan Mini Pug at the Music Gallery. You remember that, Lana? I think we have the noise canceling on. I don't know if any of that picked up, Lana. We might have to jack up the gain or something. Maria Chavez is back again this March. The info on the Canadian tour will be at the end of the episode, so stay tuned for that. I mean, it's a podcast, so you can skip around if you want, but I would just let it play. This is Maria Chavez on Zoom from New York City.
Boo. Who? This podcast is brought to you in part by Casper, a friendly name you know and trust when you need it the most. 66.6% of alive humans suffer from bad feeling conditions like depression and anxiety with no one to talk to, until now. Casper connects you directly with spirits haunting your neighborhood, who will lend a ghostly ear and channel their pre- and post-death lived experiences into the real talk only a true friend can provide. Use code PODCAST to receive one session of Casper free.
Ooh, spooky. You ready, Lana? How are you doing?
I'm okay, hanging in there, you know, adjusting to the old life again, which has been hard, but happy to be back and, yeah, just taking it one day at a time.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear about it and talk to you about it. I'm going to ask you some like interview style questions, but I was hoping that you could give your story going from working constantly as an avant-garde artist to your diagnosis and your brain surgery and your sabbatical and then coming back.
Yeah, so I've been working since I was 17 as a professional DJ that then turned into this crazy sound art career. And then when I was 34, little symptoms started to show up of a brain disorder called hemifacial spasms that at the time I didn't know. It took about 3 years for me to be diagnosed because the symptoms were just really rare. And so a lot of neurologists, neurosurgeons, neurooptometrists didn't really know what to look for. And I was seeing so many different people. And by the time I got diagnosed, I probably had about 4 or 5 MRIs under my belt by then. By the time I was declared cured of my disorder, once I got diagnosed, realized that it was a super rare brain disorder, that I had to fly to Japan to get the brain surgery done a few years later. I started just thinking about it and then I just lost my train of thought. I was like, every time I think about it, I just sort of realize, or like, it just comes back a little heavier, like what I had to endure. But yeah, once I got diagnosed, I made the decision to have a brain surgery in Japan with my neurosurgeon there, Dr. Inoue. And once you get the brain surgery, it's about a 2-year recovery period, but the recovery is more a 2-year wait to see if the brain surgery has actually worked. So you have to literally just wait for 2 years. And then by the second year, if your symptoms finally go away and stayed away for the 2-year period, then they can determine that the procedure worked and that you're cured. So sometimes the symptoms would disappear and come back full force and then disappear again and then come back like a year later. And so it was really a 2-year period of just walking on eggshells and not being able to perform, not being able to tour, having to just sit in a room and just wait because your brain is healing, your nerves are regenerating. And there's really nothing that you can do outside of sleeping and drinking a lot of water for your condition to improve. So when I realized that I had to get this crazy brain surgery, it was pretty clear that I wouldn't have a life, this life that I'd had since I was 17, at the time up till I was 39.
Wow.
And then knowing like it's gonna just halt was really, really traumatizing and scary. But I knew I needed to do it because I needed relief from the disorder, which was causing uncontrollable facial spasms on the left side of my face. So anytime I would walk, anytime any blood was circulating in my body 24/7.
Oh my God.
My pica artery, we have two arteries in our brains, ICA, AICA, and PICA, PICA, that are the main arteries that bring blood in and out of our brains. ICA brings it in, PICA takes it out. And so my PICA artery was making direct contact with my 7th cranial nerve at the base of my brain and my brainstem. And by that contact, the compression from the contact was creating, showing up as facial spasms on my face that were uncontrollable due to the fact that anytime blood flowed through my pica artery, it would continue to sever my 7th cranial nerve due to the contact. It was almost like a saw, like cutting through it.
Wow.
And over time, all of our blood vessels over time just naturally harden. And so over time, my artery was hardening. And the more it was hardening, the more it was severing my 7th cranial nerve, which was then resulting on my face as facial deformity. So it was spasming and permanently staying in a position as if my face was trying to move from where you see me to like twisting towards my ear. So it's like I was making a permanent pirate face, almost like when people go "arr" like that. Like it's like that, but like even more exaggerated, where your eye is totally closed, this side of my mouth, like I had to talk like this. So I was like, if I didn't get this, then my face would be permanently disfigured. And by the time I got my brain surgery, my eye was permanently closed, which meant I couldn't drive anymore because I had no more periphery.
That's so terrifying.
It's a degenerative disorder. So over time, it just gets worse and worse. There's nothing you can really do about it. And everyone's condition is different too, because everyone's compression is different. It's very unique and very rare. And so once I got the surgery. It like disappeared for about 2 or 3 days after the surgery, and then it came back 10 times worse.
Oh my God.
And we had, and then I had more CT scans and more MRIs, so just like, but we just decompressed it. Like, that's what the surgery is, a microvascular decompression surgery. And then it was just a waiting game because my neurosurgeon said when he went in during the surgery, he was like, I really don't know if you're gonna fully recover. It was like, you've definitely had this for over 10 years, but when it showed up, it was like 4 years in. It was like your nerve was so severed, I wasn't really sure if it was gonna rejuvenate where you would get your facial features back. And so then when it came back full force, he was like, that's the nerve memory from the nerve, thinking that the artery is still there. And so now it's reacting, but there's no compression there anymore. It's just stored up nerve memory. And nobody knows where nerve memory is stored. Nobody knows why these things happen. All you can do is just wait and be calm and drink water and sleep. That's really all you can do. So at the 2 year mark, I was declared cured, but then I had a new issue, which was my skull was reacting poorly to the skull matter that we chose to cover the hole in my skull, the craniotomy part of my surgery.
Like behind your ear where you're touching?
It's over here. I can show you when I see you. It's about this big.
Like palm-sized.
It's like maybe a little bit smaller,
Okay,
like that.
Jesus.
And so I decided I didn't want metal to cover the hole because I spoke with a few people that have had other types of brain surgeries where they had metal covering up the openings and or their craniotomy openings, and they said that over time the metal squeaks. Like if you go up on a plane, if the barometer drops and it starts to rain, like they're squeaking. And I was just like, I really don't want to have to endure that years from now.
Yeah, no.
Hopefully, if I can come back to my world, I'm going to be on planes like crazy. And that just sounds like a nightmare. So I chose to take a risk and use this skull matter to cover this hole instead. And with that, 80% of skulls don't mind it, whereas 20% hate it. And then that was what we were dealing with because I was constantly inflamed. And like the side of my face was just always on fire. Even though I had my facial features back and everything slowly started to, the symptoms slowly took about 5 months for the symptoms to finally go away. And then from there, my problem was face inferno from here to here for like 3 years, 4 years.
And when you say on fire, like it was in pain, it was tingling.
It felt like it was warm
Oh,
from
weird.
really hot to warm. And then, of course, like the inflammation, like sore, like super, super sore, really, really hot, where I just couldn't open my eye now, not because of the disorder, but now because there was just so much pain back there that it was affecting my face. And so then I still do kind of wake up like this, you know, like, and then I just sort of like try to calm my face down. I'm like, you're okay, everything's fine. The inflammation's less. It's just taken the inflammation from the skull matter a lot longer to settle in than the 2 year period that we originally planned for my sabbatical. So then I decided to extend my sabbatical another 2 years because I just couldn't imagine going back to work, being a public person, touring the world, you know, having late nights, getting on a plane early the next day,
Yeah.
having inflammation happen. Like it just sounded
And
like a nightmare.
sacrificing maybe all the work that you'd been doing, you go back to square one or something.
Yeah, it was just like, you're just not ready yet.
You had the nerve memory from it remembering the compression, and then you would wake up in the morning having the also like your eye remembering being inflamed and like trying to protect itself every time you woke up.
Yeah, so and then my shoulders are always up to try to protect my skull, like
Oh my
that
God.
thing, like the last year. Now that I'm back, it's like, put your shoulders down. Everything's okay. You're cured, put your shoulders down, you know? So that's been the next phase. The inflammation and pain is definitely much better now. It's still there, but now it only happens like once every few weeks instead of every day, which is amazing. And I am having days where I sort of forget about it, which is really exciting. And
Amazing.
I'm hoping, because I just passed my 5 year anniversary
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I'm just hoping by next year I'll totally forget all about it and won't need to celebrate anymore. Like, I'm really hoping the next few years I'm really able to walk away from all of this and just it's no longer something that affects my day to day life. It's something that was part of my life, but I worked through and now I'm not back to normal, but back to a new normal, finally.
Yeah. It's funny you say new normal because I remember it was 2019 and your surgery or 2018?
2018, yeah.
So when COVID came up and everyone had to like isolate and stay home, I remember you were kind of already pro at it.
Yeah,
what was that like?
I'd been quarantined for a year before you guys, and I was quarantined for a year after you guys went back to work because I just needed the time. But it was really bizarre because I had had a moment a few days before, and I feel like when I tell this story, a few people have like told me that they had similar moments around the same time where it was just getting very overwhelming to see the world pass me by and me not be able to participate, and to the point where I had to like stop following museums and things. So I was just like, I can't participate, and it's really hard to watch where I can't like be around. And I just had a little breakdown moment where I was like, I just wish the world would just stop for a second so that I could catch my breath, and then, you know, then they can go off. Like, I just feel like it's sort of, it was always happening underneath me while surgery was happening and everything. And it just felt.
And I'm sure, especially before COVID, it must have been so hard for people to understand what you were going through too.
It was, yeah. And I mean, that's why I made my public announcement too. It wasn't to try to gain sympathy. It was to let people know that I was going to be out of commission for like 2 years and to not contact me because for shows, because turning things down will be bad to my mental health and I'll be really sad about it. And I just let as many people know as possible to please give me time to heal and to not aggravate it by, you know, expecting me to provide the old services that I could. And it was really sad and really difficult. And then suddenly after I had this little breakdown, the world stopped. And I was like, no. I didn't want that,
you know? It's like a monkey's paw wish. You're like, no, I didn't mean it that way.
Yeah. And it was just so horrific to see because I was here in New York, so
yeah,
we really faced a lot of death, and it was very sad. But yeah, it was also just really bizarre because I was avoiding large spaces, not because of the virus, but because my skull couldn't handle a lot of volume. My ear got better, the hearing got better after the surgery. So everything was too loud. Even being in a quiet restaurant was like way too loud for me, which was another reason why it took so long for me to want to come back to my old life again, because I live in a loud environment, you know?
I mean, the loudest place in the world is a club during sound check or 2 a.m. when everyone's screaming over each other.
Right, and then like loud kick drums are kicking in. And,
so
I was already avoiding spaces, wearing masks, staying in, not going anywhere, and then seeing all of you guys follow suit after getting such weird looks for wearing masks all that year, and then suddenly everyone's wearing masks and no one's giving each other a hard time anymore. I was just like, you see, I was doing it too, but I was wearing a mask at the suggestion of my neurosurgeon in Japan, because in Japan they wear masks when they get sick because they don't want to spread their germs to other people, so it's sort of part of their culture already. There, when you wear a mask, it's like letting the public know that that they're trying to protect the public. And so he said, if you wear a mask, then people will know that you're either dealing with a medical issue or like, you know, and it'll protect you from getting a virus, because the opening was still open for about, I stayed in Japan for a month because he wanted the whole room to close before I left the island, because it would be hard for me to come back should I get sick or something.
So
then from there he was like, all right, it's closed up, but let's try to keep avoiding viruses, so keep wearing your mask for at least a year just to protect yourself. And I was like, okay. I was also on medication for about 8-9 months, epilepsy medication, which made me like feel like I was like drunk all the time, but without the fun of being drunk, so I couldn't really walk a straight line very well.
Oh wow.
For about a year and a half I couldn't really walk a straight line.
Was that to kind of relax the nerves, or what was that for?
Exactly. It was meant to help encourage the nerve regeneration by just fully relaxing the nerve. But it relaxes all of your nerves in a way where epilepsy, it's meant to like encourage relaxation to avoid the seizures that start. But for me, because it relaxed everything, I just felt like I was like,
It's too bad they couldn't just like specialize it in the one area or something.
No, it's impossible to do that for sure.
Yeah.
But it was a very long recovery already. Even with the quarantine, it actually just, for me, made things easier because then I could actually work again because everything was live stream and I could stay home and still send DJ mixes and give lectures, but all from home, which was really helpful. And whereas if the pandemic hadn't happened, I wouldn't have been as seen in social media doing these kind of live stream events at all. So I, in a way, the pandemic sort of made it more accessible for me to be able to still participate without having to be present. But yeah, it was also just really sad to watch you guys go through the same thing that I had to endure the year before, which is like stopping your whole life, losing all your gigs, not knowing what the future is going to bring, you know, not knowing who's going to be around, you know, what's going to be around.
Yeah. You'd gone through it, so you could almost feel it for everybody else again.
And I offered like to lend an ear to anybody that was having a, you know, a crisis about it. So I was like, I've already had to go through this the last year, so I understand. And if anybody needs validation, I'm here. And a few people reached out, and so I'm glad I could be there for people in that way to be like, look, I'm really sorry, but this is definitely something that people have already been experiencing in other ways.
I think even without COVID, like it's not something a lot of people are going to experience, but I think more people than would be ready for it have something happen to them where like their whole life ends up shutting down. So just thanks for talking to me, because I feel like some people will relate to it. And like,
oh, for sure. You know, that's what I tell everyone. It's like, especially when you're young, everyone is going to have a major medical issue. It's guaranteed.
Yeah.
No one is going to stay perfectly healthy all their lives. Like, it's going to happen. It's just that my thing happened really young. And I know a lot of other people that have had similar experiences that have reached out and thanked me for being so vocal and sharing. And I'm glad to be there for them, because I really didn't know that there was this huge community out there of people that are suffering chronic illness or certain neurological disorders, or and so in a way I've become like a representative of them, like, you know, because I've endured this, I understand. And I feel like too, with the pandemic, the public now has a glimpse of what it's like to be stuck at home, to not be able to participate in society the way that everybody else gets to. And hopefully some people have hung on to it.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe not as much as they could, but at least a little bit.
Yeah.
I know you mentioned that you were doing research and talking to other people before your surgery. How did that help you decide what to do and to feel comfortable and okay? And how did you find those people?
Well, they were part of a closed Facebook group that I was in of people that suffered my disorder. And then it just so happens that there's a few people in the scene that have had brain surgeries. So like James Engelfritz has to have them actually fairly frequently. His brain really likes to make tumors.
Oh, wow.
So he constantly has to go in and see if there's any mass, and if it's in a mass area that's dangerous, then they have to go in. And so he's had a few. And then my friend had a brain injury where another friend who had to get metal put in their skull. So it was either through just asking around or through this Facebook closed group of people that suffered from my disorder. And that was how I found my neurosurgeon, Dr. Inoue, in Japan, because a person in my group who lived in Hawaii went and had a consultation with him first. And she was like, I think I'm going to work with this guy. He seems pretty legit. And then she said the cost of it, which was far cheaper than any other place in the world. It's only $9,000 American dollars compared to America, where it started.
A brain surgery.
Yeah.
Wow.
One of the complicated brain surgeries too. So it would be $150,000 in America to start per hour of anesthesia, and my surgery was 7 hours long, $200,000 per hour.
In the U.S.?
In the U.S. There's another neurosurgeon in Zurich, but it's $50,000 US, but they have an entire wing dedicated to my disorder. And so that was my other option. So when I was doing my Goodbye Global tour, where I was playing in all of the cities I possibly could for 4 months before it was also a tool to get me to visit these neurosurgeons to decide who I was going to work with after this tour. And so then I DJed and performed in Zurich, and then the next day I was really tired and had my consult with the neurosurgeon there, flew to Japan, had a tour there, really tired, had my consultation there, flew to Spain right after that. And in Spain, when I was in Valencia performing, that was when I made my first choice of going with Dr. Emily and going to Japan, because then it was only 9,000. So plus a stay for a month, all of our travel, all of our expenses only added up to like 15,000 to 20,000. It was so much less than.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And even that is still a lot of money to, just grateful.
Of course.
Family was able to cover it and help me through that.
I feel like everything I've ever seen you do, you've been very committed to it. So I'm not surprised by how committed you stayed to figuring this out once you got your diagnosis and then the surgery and the recovery. But I'm interested in what coping mechanisms you had going into this and what new ones you might have learned along the way, because I can't imagine getting through all that and still being so steady.
I cried a lot. It was definitely a lot of mourning. I think that the one thing I've learned a lot from this whole experience is how to grieve. And that's been an interesting experience, because now I grieve for other losses, but I feel like I can deal with it better than when I was dealing with this whole loss.
How would you describe grief, like the processing of a loss, or?
I think it's the acceptance of the process of grief.
Oh, yeah.
So then I know, like, right now I'm in denial. Right now I'm grieving. Right now I'm bargaining. You know, because those steps are really there. They're just not one after another. They're sort of intertwined. So they just happen differently on different days. And so then when you can recognize what step you are in the grief for that day, you might go two steps back and two steps forward, you know, like. But to me, that's been really helpful. It's like identifying, okay, today I'm feeling like this. I'm really sad. I'm still in grieving mode today. Okay, well then let's be gentle. Let's take it easy. Stay in bed if you need to. I stayed in bed a lot, played a lot of funny TV shows just in the background, just to have a lot of laughing in the background.
What was your favorite one?
I love Bob's Burgers.
Oh.
That's a really nice one to just have playing in the background. Pretty much any sitcom that was easy to watch. Although the 90s sitcoms are so problematic now with their public and transphobic jokes and things. But it was just, I was watching a lot of old Conan, 90s Conan O'Brien episodes on YouTube. And funny thing, like old SNL, like Chris Farley stuff, and like sort of mixed in with like lectures from philosophers, and played a lot of Tetris, which was really helpful, like mind games and things, not just to pass the time, but just to, you know, keep my mind off of the grief of like losing so much. And that was really helpful as well. I couldn't listen to music for about a year and a half. It took a long time to listen to techno. It was pretty much just like taking each day at a time and figuring out what I needed for that day and trying not to think too far ahead of that day, which was really hard, but no, there was nothing I could do. It was all I could do.
Yeah, because would you say that there's no way to power through grief? Like you have to let it pass like the weather, or?
Yeah, you have to just let it, you know, you have to endure it, unfortunately. There's no way to escape it outside of drugs and alcohol, which sometimes helps, but not in the sense of like abusing it. Or, you know, it's certainly more about like just sitting with it and recognizing that that's what you're going through and that it sucks, and telling yourself that you're sorry. Because especially for me, I had a mother that wasn't very good at being compassionate and pain. So as I try to reparent myself, I try to be the parent that I wish I had. So I just tell myself, instead of get over it, it's I'm really sorry, this sucks. This really, really sucks. And this isn't fair. And you should cry. And then, give myself a hug and cry and,
Yeah, that's such an amazing ability to have. I know that I'm supposed to do that for myself, but it's so hard to remember.
No, it's not easy. I'm going through a breakup right now with someone that I really cared about. But we were only together for a few months. But, I've been really sad about it. And
I'm sorry.
It ended well, though, but it's just sad.
Yeah.
To lose someone that you care about. And and I noticed that throughout the last few weeks, I've been really sad, and I have really great conversations with myself. I'm I'm really sad today. I'm having a hard day, and that's okay, because you're sad and you have a right to be sad because it's sad. And then because of that, then I can enter the day a little differently than just being depressed, because I had that conversation with myself and I validated it to myself that it is sad. And I don't think I would have been able to do that a few years before had I not had this experience.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds so simple, but that is advanced level living, honestly. it's hard to do, and I'm so glad that you can do it. I'm so proud of you.
But I think also it's that's kind of art too. That's kind of genius is simplicity,
Yeah, for sure.
But it's really, really hard. I see a parallel in that, because you're right, it does sound simple, but each day that I've been enduring it, it hasn't been simple. It's been really hard, but at least each day I have the new tools to recognize what I'm enduring. And there's certainly a parallel there to good ideas that seem so oh, my kid could paint that.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder than that. Just parenenting yourself and going through grief.
Yeah, when you strip something down, you can really see where the talent and the dedication come from.
Thank you.
I did want to talk a bit about stuff you have coming up. And I don't know if there's anything you wanted to touch on.
Well, I'm really just talking about the Canada tour. I'll be showing my marble sculpture in Ottawa and in Toronto. So you guys get to see the sculpture in person. Along with watching the performance, which I think will really create a new arc in the work that I couldn't bring the last time because I hadn't reached that area of my practice yet. So I'm just glad to be back, and I want to recreate this moment performing with Lana again. So I hope she comes back. One of my most favorite pictures for sure. But yeah, I'm also just really excited to be able to perform because I'll bring my own setup, 4 turntables, 8 needles, my double needles. It's a new setup. So when I performed in Toronto the last time, it was just 1 turntable, 1 DJ mixer, where now I have my 4 turntable, 8 needle setup. And so it's going to be a more longer form piece that I've been working on. And if there's a piano in there, I might pull that into the mix too, which has been really fun to perform.
We do have a piano.
Yes. I meant to ask.
They might need to get it tuned or something, but definitely we have one.
So it'll be this long form piece with piano, and then throughout the piece you can walk in and out because it'll be more an installation, and then you can go and you can visit the sculpture and come back in and touch the sculpture, which is based on a magnified image of a vinyl record. So it's a vinyl groove number 1, and it's about 1 foot by 1 foot by 3 inches or 4 inches, really thick, and you can touch the sound grooves of the sculpture. It's more.
I love that you can touch it. That's amazing.
Yeah, you can touch the art, right? especially marble. We're not allowed to ever touch it, but it looks so pretty. Why can't we touch it? Sort of how a turntable works. It's you can't touch the turntable, but it's all open and free to the elements. Why can't I touch it? I want to touch it. I feel they both blend the same kind of desire. And so I think that's going to be really interesting to see how the public reacts to the combination of everything, because this is really a very new next phase of my work where I'm showing the sculptures within the performances rather than like finding a gallery to show it for a long time, which the sculpture has been already shown in a few exhibitions. Mm-hmm. But I like the idea of touring with her and bringing her to everywhere I play, and then having people look at her before I play, and then looking at her again after I'm done, and seeing if that sort of opens or closes any thoughts.
And kind of like having columns on either side, but
in your own way. Yeah, exactly.
And you have a workshop in Toronto too at InterAccess?
Yep, at InterAccess on the 13th. Bring your own records. They will be broken. But it's a workshop, Turntablism, based on my book of technique, chance procedures on turntable. And everyone will get, yay!
I love this book.
Thank you so much. No print copies left, but everyone gets a PDF of the book after the workshop.
So that
you can see it on the practices after. So if you show up, you get a free book. And yeah, just make sure to bring a lot of records. And hopefully we'll also have a big box of dollar records for people to break. But it's a Skillshare. It starts off as an audio engineering Skillshare of how turntables work and how to put it all together and why. And then we throw it all out the window and we break it.
Oh my God, amazing. And do you want people to bring records to the show if they have
some? Yeah. If you want to bring records to the show, I'm happy to break them and utilize them. Yeah, so please do.
And we have a minute and 9 seconds left if you want to converse with Lana ahead of your... I think the noise canceling is going to comment, get rid of her on there. But.
Lana seems not interested. No, I can't wait to see what you're going to wear for the show, Lana. What should I wear? Last time I had a wardrobe malfunction, I had to last minute find something at Cos at the downtown Toronto.
Oh my God. I have an amazing picture of you guys last year. You both looked extremely cute.
No, I'm excited to see Lana.
Yeah, if you guys want to coordinate outfits, let me know. She has a lot of like influencer friends who pass down outfits for her. So
well, once I decide the color scheme, maybe we can.
Amazing. I don't want to completely cut you off, so I'm gonna say thank you so much. And I wish that we could talk for like 5 hours because everything that you say is beautiful.
Thank you.
And I'll see you soon, though.
I'm so excited. We're gonna be together soon.
Yeah. Sorry about that rather abrupt ending, but if you would like more Maria Chavez and You're in Toronto, the live performance and art installation she was talking about will be at the Music Gallery March 14th. That's at 918 Bathurst Street. And full disclosure, I work there. I don't know. I made the poster. And at InterAccess, doing a workshop called Abstract Turntablism on March 13th. You can find more information about that at interaccess.org. If you're not in Toronto, but you are in Montreal, you can see Maria on Friday the 15th at Exposé Noir. Find more information on Instagram, XO_Noir, or www.xxxxxxxxxx.org. That is 11 X's for anyone interested in what is going on with Drone Therapy Podcast. We have some merch in the Etsy store. That is dyingbutfine.etsy.com. And if you want to support the show, that is great. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/crystaljax, KRISTELJAX. And we will be back soon because I want to close the book on the DBT book. And what better time to do it than now, right? Yeah. You want to say goodbye, Lana? Thanks so much for listening. And Lana and I hope to see you Thursday in Toronto at the Maria Chavez Show. Oh.